The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another UAB Director's Chair. He is the AD, Athletic Director for the UAB Blazers. Go Blazers. Mark Ingram joins us every single week right here on the TKR app. You can hear the show at least 5 days a week. Yeah, baby. And also, of course, as many times as you want on your favorite podcast platform. We're available on every major industry right here on our Tony YouTube channel, which you can see every single week as well. Mark, what's going on, brother? Everything good? I know we haven't talked in about 5 or 6 days. A lot going on with the UAB basketball program since we spoke. Yep. And I know that your last show you did from Fort Worth, which was fantastic. Spokane. You did from Fort Worth and then Spokane. Yep. And then obviously you're back in Birmingham. But congratulations on a very successful sports year. I'll start there. But also, of course, on a basketball year that obviously it could have been better. But I think you got to be happy with where it went.
Oh, 100%. Listen, yep. I don't think that anyone at the beginning of the season would have thought that we would wind up being the American Conference tournament champion. And that's not to talk ill of our players or our coaches. I just think, mm-hmm. The competition was tough, really good teams. And we knew that, and we kind of felt like we were preseason number four, kind of thought that would be, a good year one to go into the league and finish fourth. We thought Florida Atlantic's got everybody coming back from that Final Four team, and Memphis was loaded with talent. And so I think we felt like that was a reasonable kind of selection.
Yeah. Right? I want to go back to a conversation you and I had about 8-9 weeks ago. The West Virginia position was opening up, but of course there was some talk about perhaps Andy taking that gig. We knew he was friends with Bobby Huggins and you shot that down, and then you told me about a backdoor conversation you had with Coach Kennedy, and he said, listen, I like this team. I like this team a lot. I really think this team could grow, and I think this team could be better throughout the year. And that's one thing that Andy's been really good at, particularly obviously the last 3 years or 4 years of the program. He has just, you look at early in the year of every program of the last year, over the last 4 years, and seen how he's grown his program. You can no doubt say that he's one of the best coaches in college basketball right now. But and to see what he's did, and certainly in the AAC in the first year, should speak volumes. He was right. He knew something there.
Yeah, look, man, Andy has gone to 3 straight conference tournament championship finals, and he's won 2 of them.
Yeah,
2 in CUSA, and now 1 in the American, and made it to the NIT finals last year. Unfortunately, lost, but. I mean, that's a lot of wins. He's got 101 wins in 4 years, which is a ton. And so we're really fortunate to have Andy. Andy loves Birmingham. He's obviously passionate about UAB and sees what we could become, and really feels like we could become a stable, presence that people really look at and go, hey, man, those guys at UAB are really good. And I agree with him. The key now – and you saw Yaxel Lindeborg and Christian Coleman are coming back from this year's team, which is terrific. Because of the transfer portal and really the ability to play and transfer as many times as you want without having to sit out, what you now have is all sports are this way. Basketball, sports like basketball, I'd say soccer is this way. There's a cohesion that happens. There's this gelling, I don't know, that occurs that I know that if I'm the guard and I drive the lane, after I've played with you enough, I know that you are going to be out on the wing. If I get in trouble and I can't make that layup or that little lob floater, Tony's out on the wing. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to take it and I know that Tony is following up for a putback dunk or whatever because you're that kind of player. That just takes time. And you can't just put a group of guys together and go, okay, go play, and imagine them and expect them to be, this well-oiled machine. And so we have for at least 2 straight years, and I want to say it's 3, had like 7 or 9 brand new players on the team each year.
Yeah.
And that's hard, which I think says a lot about why we are maybe not as good at the beginning of the season as we are at the end. And it's also about, Andy's coaching ability, taking the team. Like I said, there's just certain things you can't teach. It just develops over time. And while we are so much better at the end of the season is we're still getting to know each other at the beginning, but then over, as we mount through the end of the year, they really start to know each other and trust each other and kind of understand whose role is what, you know. Hey, I'm not the guy that has to score every point every night.
Yeah.
And there was a going into, I think it was going into that game in Spokane against San Diego State, a reporter asked him a question and said something like, we had gone five straight games and had a different person as our high scorer in each of those five games, which is an amazing statistic, I think.
Mm-hmm. That is. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, to go three games with three different scores is amazing. Right. To go five is now some people may look at that and say, well, you don't have a leader. You don't have a guy. No, you may have multiple leaders on the basketball squad, which is fantastic. Speaking of leaders, Business Insider just came out with their NIL evaluations, and they came out with their top 10 college athlete makers as far as money goes. And I wanted to give you the top six. And I wanted you just to kind of, I'm doing this for a reason. So go with me. Okay. Number one is Bronny, LeBron James' son, $4.9 million. His NIL valuation. Shedeur Sanders, $4.7 million. Libby Dunn, $3.6 million out of LSU. Caitlin Clark, $3.1 million. Archie Manning, $2.8 million. And then Travis Hunter, the multi dual threat quarterback there for Colorado, $2.4 million. When you hear those names, first of all, you know all those names, right? Any surprises to those names? And I guess the reason I'm telling you is for kids out there thinking they're going to go get a big NIL deal. And listen, we're talking millions of dollars here. We're not talking about $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, which is big. It's not chump change for a lot of these kids. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But if you go in there thinking you're going to make $1 million, just look at the names on that list. And really, all of them have a lot of media presence behind them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not getting the deals and then they're all over television. They've been on television. No one knew who Shedeur Sanders was. Nobody knew who he was.
Yeah.
And obviously, look at his dad. And then Archie Manning. We know who the Mannings are, for God's sakes. And you don't think Archie Manning's going to get some big time bucks? So, I mean, these are really huge names. These names are already huge before they even think about playing professional ball anywhere else.
Yeah. Well, look, I want to be careful not to slight those young kids and their athletic abilities, because they're all really, really great. But you're talking about Shedeur Sanders, whose son is a Hall of Fame football player.
Yep.
Arch Manning, whose father and two uncle, or sorry, his grandfather and his two uncles are Hall of Famers.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about Bronny James, whose father is arguably the best player, certainly without a doubt, one of the best players in the history of basketball. So these are all famous people who are famous if they play sports or not. Okay. Now, Libby Dunn and Caitlin Clark and
do you not love to see that though? Do you not live? If I told you that this was going to happen a year ago and two of the top five people were going to be women, isn't it great? I mean, isn't that great for them?
It is great. But look now, Caitlin Clark is an amazing player. That girl can shoot it from the beach.
She owns every record in the books.
It's amazing what she does on the court. So good for her. Like, I would question. I'm not. None of those names surprise me. What I would question is their true value, but their value, most of them are wrapped up in who their parents are, who their relatives are, not who they are. Arch Manning hasn't played a down of college football yet. And now I have no doubt he's going to be terrific. But you know, Libby Dunn has got a social media following that she created before she was ever in college. Like, that's a legitimate following that she created through gymnastics and modeling and all this other stuff. And that she was really active on her own social media.
Yeah.
Caitlin Clark is, you know, one of the best, maybe the best women's college player ever. She's a high scorer, undoubtedly. And then the Travis Hunter kid from Colorado, here's a guy who plays both ways. Like, he doesn't have any famous relatives. That guy is a freak athlete. You know, give those their credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
These other guys, it's like, well, your parents are famous, so therefore you're wrong. I was like Paris Hilton.
Yeah. That's, hey, listen, get it where you can. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, obviously,
I refuse to believe that they're actually getting that kind of money.
No, I totally agree with you. And again, if you don't have the last name Sanders or the last name Manning, you're not getting that kind of money. We obviously want our kids to do everything on their own and make it on their own. They will. But if I could give you $4 million in pocket change before you hit the real world, get a little ahead of yourself, that's less than you're going to be Venmoing me at 4 o'clock in the morning. So that's not such a bad thing. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We got a couple of interesting email questions we'll get into. Mark Ingram is the UAB Athletic Director. It's called the UAB Director's Chair. We have more shows coming up with UAB here a little bit later on this spring and summer. We're really, really excited about. Did not want to leave his name here. Obviously, not an Alabama fan, but wanted to talk about Nick Saban. Heard us talking about Coach the last couple of weeks. Of course, he goes up on Capitol Hill and was talking about what he thought was going to have to happen in college sports now that he's out. And this particular individual said, I don't want a guy, a former in all caps, going up there speaking for my clubs or speaking for my college sports and what he thinks is best for college athletics. You know, what gives him the right to go up there, and to the fact that he's not ever no longer even coaching anymore in college sports. Now, he may end up being the commissioner of this new thing we're talking about. I'm hearing all kinds of things that perhaps that would be, I don't know if he wants to get back in or not, but maybe that's a way he can move the needle in his own way. What's your thoughts on that? Some people, I mean, obviously this is not a Nick Saban fan, but I've heard it from several people going, you know, all of a sudden here's a guy that, you know, was outspoken when he needed to be for his own institution. Now all of a sudden he's speaking for a much larger thing. And some people don't like that.
Well, you know, I think I don't know who decided the group that got to go to Capitol Hill. The flaw in it is not taking anybody from the group of five schools. There's not one AD or football coach to go and speak on their perspective. And I think that Congress struggles to listen very clearly to a person that's making $12 million a year and in an athletic department that has over $200 million annually to operate, probably not getting a lot of sensitive ears. However, I really respect Coach Saban, who I've never met. I think I've said that on the show before. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's certainly not out of touch. I mean, I'd rather him go up there than a lot of other people. And I think people, not to talk out of both sides of my mouth, I do think people listen to him because they know what a good coach he is. And I'd rather him be up there talking about it than anybody in Congress. The problem is you got a bunch of people in Congress acting like know-it-alls, and they literally know nothing. They don't know anything about the subject. I've had conversations with people who are involved in that conversation at the congressional level. They know nothing. What they are talking about is ridiculous. And examples that they provide are examples I've had to look back at them and say, sir or ma'am, I have literally never heard anybody that's trying to do what you just described.
Yeah.
And, but they, you know, they have a child who once was a student athlete or was almost a student athlete or a cousin or something or a neighbor, and they become in their own mind an expert, or, you know, they were a student athlete 25 or 30 years ago. So they are the quote unquote expert. I can tell you, man, I realized how little I knew about college athletics when I stopped being a student athlete and moved over into the athletic department. When that happened, I went, wow, had no idea that there was all these people with all these responsibilities. And I had no idea what all was going on in here.
Yeah.
There's so much work happening. You're shielded for, you know, your coaches, your trainers, your strength coaches, your equipment managers. That's who you know.
Yeah. I'm not going to ask you to build out a business model here live on our podcast here, because obviously it's much larger than anything that we could possibly do together. But what's your thoughts on Nick Saban or anyone being chosen as a commissioner of a new league? I don't know where the NCAA is going, and I want to talk about Charlie Baker here in just a few seconds. He actually did something I really, really thought was very poignant and very beautiful in what he just tried to do a few minutes ago. But do you like the idea of having a one guy being some type of a commissioner, and how would that work with the universities? I know that's a huge question.
We sort of have that already with the college football playoff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the executive director, the person running the championship, is the person in charge.
Yep.
And even if they aren't formally dictating my scheduling, they are telling by their selections, by the committee selections, they are telling schools how to schedule, right? They're telling you, you know, your strength of schedule mattered or it didn't matter or whatever. And so you adjust your schedule to try to conform to what they've created. So in a lot of ways, we already have that. It's just not, it's not formally stated that way, but that's what I would say you have in what was Bill Hancock and now the new executive director, which is the retired president from Air Force. So I think I'm for it because I think there's got to become some consistency in our rules. And I think you need football people in charge of football. And I don't like, you know, I would say the same thing is also true for soccer or volleyball, but, you know, football is just the sport that financially drives every school, even a Kansas, and now a Kansas fan or even a member of their department can say, oh, that's not true. Here, I can show you the ticket sales numbers, whatever. Yeah, but the Big 12 television contract is driven by football. So, So yes, it is. You're going to make more from that than you are from your basketball ticket sales. And so it's true at Kentucky and Duke and everywhere else, even though they may sell more tickets or it may be more popular than their football brand, the bulk of their money is coming round in a roundabout way from football. And so it's important that we have that right. We got to have that organized and we have to have it, you know, fair and equitable. My only thing is that we've tried to go away from equity, and I wish we could get back to equity and competition rather than just how can we make more money? You know, you got to have money to run the thing, right?
Sure. Yeah.
But you know, we've gone away from trying to create parity, which is opposite of the NFL. The NFL's successful because they create parity. You know, the Super Bowl champion is not rewarded with the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of that, you know, and they do that to create parity. And everybody in the NFL gets, you know, the NFL does the television contract, not the NFC East and the AFC West doing their own thing, which is what we're doing in college sports. We got the SEC doing a deal and the Big 12 doing a deal and Conference USA doing a deal and Sun Belt and the American and, you know, Big 10 and everybody's doing their own deal instead of all of us having one deal and then equally sharing all that money. And then it's like, go compete, man.
Yeah.
No, we've engineered it so that there's a small group of people who have kind of globbed together to create their own deal. The equivalent would be if the LA teams and Dallas and Chicago and New York got together and said, we're going to separate from the NFL. We're going to have our own separate league. And then we're going to make Green Bay, Kansas City, and Buffalo, you know, Jacksonville, Florida, fend for themselves. You know, Tennessee, good luck.
Yeah.
Carolina, we're going to make them fend for themselves, and they'll be a lower tier. They can do whatever they want to do. Mm-hmm. We're going to go do something more special because we're in bigger markets.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's happened with the SEC and the Big Ten right now.
I was on a television show, actually my television show, called ABC's 3340 Starting Lineup. It's on every Saturday morning from 10:30 to 11 o'clock. We had Kip Kiefer, who's my radio partner on TKR, as the executive director of the Birmingham Racecourse and Paramutual Commission. And we're talking about gambling here in the state of Alabama. And you were talking about, you know, this may be the best shot for it to go forward. It appears it's falling apart again. And the one thing they are doing is I think I went through the House first and went through the Senate, or one or the other. And the other one, it flew through, and the other one pulled it back and started pulling everything off, including table games and everything that we know as gambling, including sports gambling. Charlie Baker has taken it a step forward as the head of the NCAA and is now asking the government and other states, individual states who, and obviously you can gamble in every state, I think, but five right now, to take prop bets off the board, primarily for college students. And I think it's brilliant. I mean, I love prop bets. I love over-unders. And you can bet on a team over. But a prop bet in this particular case would be any individualized type of bet. It can be anything team-oriented, but you couldn't bet on so-and-so scoring more than 28.5 points later on tonight in a game, which they have right now if you want to bet offline. What's your thoughts on that? I thought that was pretty good.
It is, and there was a great article that I read where the young man from North Carolina, Baycott, said that he got, I think he said 100 social media messages after there was some prop bet where if he got a certain number of rebounds, you know, these people would have won however much money I guess they wagered, and he fell short by like one or two rebounds. Well, he's not thinking about that. Man, the guy's just out there playing basketball. But then he gets all these threatening messages from people that bet that were angry with him for not getting as many rebounds as they needed him to get. Mm-hmm. That, there's no place for that.
Yep.
There's just no place for that. And you know, you get, I have not gotten these, but I'm sure, I know that our players take wagering off the table. I mean, our student athletes get nasty messages from people all the time talking about how bad they played or something. And I'm sure it's gambling related, whether it's a prop bet per se or just the win-loss margin and all that. And the guy drops a pass that would have gone for a touchdown or something like that, or he kicked a field goal or didn't kick a field goal that would have pushed it over or under some threshold. They get that now. So yeah. I have no sympathy for the gamblers that win or lose money or don't. I mean, I have zero sympathy for it. These kids are out there just trying to play the game and entertain all of us and perform and have fun and play the game they love. That's on you, man. But I'm all for, if we're going to do it, making those prop bets impermissible.
No, I think it's great. And I don't know if it's, there are already four, I believe, states, Vermont, Ohio, I think is part of that, where they have no prop bets for that main reason. And you know, I've been in Vegas enough to see a guy at 4 o'clock in the morning. He's got three mortgages on his home and he's got another one and he's got his hand in his, and he needs this 18-year-old to sink this basket to win his bet. And I want to say, you know what, if you're dumb enough to bet your mortgage on an 18-year-old who you don't know is doing 3 hours before tip off tonight. I mean, that you get what you need. You know, I mean, I don't ever wish bad things on anybody, but that's what you deserve. You know, at least try to bet on some professionals that got some money riding on this thing. Yeah, but so it's kind of funny. It's kind of strange. All right. Let's talk some classic rock. I think I threw this question at you a couple of weeks ago. What's classic rock going to look like in 25 years? And we've got all these bands now, you know, the Eagles have lost a member and they're going to probably lose another member. And then we got all these bands and they're losing members. And what they're doing over the long period of time is losing a member here and there. And then you get to the point where you're a Lynyrd Skynyrd, where you don't have any remembered members of Lynyrd Skynyrd. But I would say Lynyrd Skynyrd now sounds, looks, and feels the same as Lynyrd Skynyrd did in the late 70s and early 80s. Now, if I was around in the late 70s, early 80s on watching them, I may disagree with that statement. But for a guy that's 58 years of age, I think Lynyrd Skynyrd right now is Lynyrd Skynyrd. Yeah. If I see four 25-year-old black kids up there doing moves as the Coasters, which I saw a couple of years ago, and they're called the Coasters because they bought the name out. I don't think that's the Coasters, even though they bought the name out. They're calling themselves the Coasters. You paid for it. You could be whatever you want. So I'm starting to think to myself, you know, ZZ Top, Dusty, Billy, and Frank. You couldn't say ZZ Top without Dusty, Billy, and Frank. Now, obviously, you got a third of that gone. And so we're losing these members, and we're going to lose more and more as we go. And all of a sudden, Pete Townsend has come out late yesterday and said, I think we're going to do a farewell tour and then I'm going to quote unquote crawl off and die. And I wasn't even aware that the Who were still on the road. I didn't know. The last time I saw them live was at the Super Bowl show like 10 or 15 years ago. And I'll be honest with you, it's the Who. They will always have a place in my heart. If they didn't sound very good, Roger's 90 years old. He can't hit the notes anymore. Pete can still play the guitar, but it's just the two of those guys. And so if they want to do a farewell tour, but if someone came in and bought out the name, the Who, and continued to tour the next 50 or 60 years, would you want to go see that? Or would you want to go hear that? If it sounded good and if it stuck true to the note that the Who originally played it.
That sounds like a Vegas lounge act.
Yeah. A really good Vegas lounge act. A really good one.
I mean, so it's not going to, they're not filling Protective Stadium with that.
No.
But they're, you know,
I don't know.
Iron City.
I mean, you know, say if Don Henley dies next week, are people going to stop seeing the Eagles? No,
I think what I mentioned last week when we talked about this was these tribute bands. And I went to see a Van Halen tribute band. My daughter got me tickets for Christmas a couple of years ago. And I was really kind of excited because I thought, oh, this will be fun and funny. Tony, there were like I don't want to exaggerate. There were like 30 people there. There was like nobody there. And I, when I walked in, I kept thinking, surely this is going to fill up, right?
Were they good?
They were great. They were great.
Wow.
They were great. They had like a 17-year-old kid playing lead guitar. He was phenomenal. The lead singer kind of had this David Lee Roth look and feel if David Lee Roth gained 40 pounds. And but he was good and he sounded good and he had a lot of funny kind of moves that Dave had. His hair was the same, you know.
Yeah.
But they sounded great. But there was nobody there. And it was just, I just thought, I felt bad for them, you know. And it was a no energy show because everybody was kind of like.
Yeah, that sucks. And I don't know how long this band's been around. You know, everyone has to go through nights on a stage like that in order to get a following. I got a good friend of mine who plays the drums. Actually, his father's a good friend of mine, plays the drums for Hotel California, which is the I say a ripoff. It's they're a cover band they are covering. Don Henley actually gives him his reference. He believes in them and he's like, listen, if you're going to go see the Eagles and you can't see us, this is the man I want you to go see. And this band's unbelievable. So yeah, John Mellencamp is going to be playing here. And I think I asked you this last week, but I can't remember because it was kind of big news. He's coming here a little bit in April and was biting back at a particular fan a couple nights ago. Did we talk about that? I don't know. Did we? Because someone asked me, and I actually got an email referring back to that, that was going to ask you about people. Yeah, we did, because we were talking about comedy acts. And I was like, I think I already talked to him about that because we talk a lot of classic rock in the show. But yeah, he's getting a lot of back. Splash on that, and it's actually hurting some of his ticket sales. But I think he's at a point where he doesn't really care.
Rude.
Yeah, it is.
It's
but
rude to heckle somebody during their show.
Yeah. Not during a football game, though.
That's right. Or baseball.
You can do whatever you want.
Fire the officials, all the advice you'd like.
Exactly. All right, brother. Keep in touch. Let me know what's going on. We'll get up next week.
That sounds great, man.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.